if we look at like players on the field as individual contributors, you have captains and you have all-stars, and those aren't always necessarily the same people. They can teach each other, right? As a manager, the thing you want to see is your star player, like pulling younger players aside. And
being I want the number one shortstop to be teaching his backup how to play shortstop, not the coach teaching him how to play shortstop.
You're listening to Content Logistics, a podcast for B2B marketers looking to build a content engine that drives revenue. In each episode, Camille Trent interviews the marketers behind the best content marketing flywheels and uncovers the tactical aspects of content production from first draft to first customer.
So the format of this episode is a little different. It's actually the first time that I've had two guests on at once, but I really got into this idea of content career pathing. Both because I've been, you know, trying to set up clear career paths like for the people on my team, but also just thinking about my own career path and people I've met in content that are all very talented, but in very different ways, and how not understanding what your strengths are or what you want out of a content marketing job or even what content marketing is can sort of like send you down the wrong path. And also just not having a direction can send you down the wrong path. So I wish that I'd had content like this earlier. And that's usually like my guiding light for creating content is create the content you want to see in the world, right? So that's kind of what this episode is about. To kick some of this off, so you can get an idea of what I'm trying to say here is there's a content strategist, right? Like person who thinks like big picture, sees the connections between everything. Kind of like is that glue between like product marketing and content creation and distribution can work, you know, interdepartmentally. So there's kind of that person. And there's like the content strategist, like as it relates to SEO specifically. So it's like what I think of as the technical content strategist, right? Like where you think of all those things in terms of like backlinks and interlinking and architecture of your site. There's kind of that skill set, but then there's also a similar thing for more of brand content. So thinking about like how you can make cascading content and turn big content into little content into big content, use that content as a feedback loop for your product team. There's different ways to think about this. So there's those, right? And then there's also the editor, right? So someone who's very good at editing someone else's work, making people sound smarter, more concise, more interesting. And I've met some really good editors in the past, and honestly, not my biggest strength. So there's editing, and then there's the writer, right? Like, so someone who is just really good with words, but also good conceptually. So sometimes like the writer needs to have some strategy skills in terms of like understanding how to make a good hook, like make a good title, have a good angle like on the story. It's really sort of difficult to teach that. So there are those, and there's also kind of like this new like media content person. So more of that like production operator person. So someone who approaches content from more of like an operations standpoint or understands media and video. So I could just like go on for probably 30 minutes, like just blurting out different types of like content marketers. So that's why I thought an episode like this would be important, to kind of like sit down with Bridget, who is the head of brand and content at Postal, but recently transitioned into that role from a different one. Wanted to get her thoughts on this. And then Brendan Hufford, who has been in some director like level roles, but is now more of an IC and a growth content marketer, which is another role that I don't hear about often. So wanted to get like their different perspectives on how to career path like for content marketing and for marketing in general, and understanding like what to look for in a company and how you are going to be successful. So that's a little intro for you. And without further ado, let's get into it. Everything is content, like literally everything. One time somebody posted on LinkedIn and said, how do you define content marketing? And I posted a little GIF from Simba of like everything the light touches, like everything is content marketing. And if you boil down what goes into marketing, it's content and the distribution of that content. And typically the content department is also responsible for the organic distribution. So really like everything except for paid, and even paid content has to fuel the paid that's going out, every word, like every design that is content. And so really saying you're a content marketer doesn't mean much anymore. You could be a social media marketer. You could be a SEO marketer. You could be an events marketer. It's really broad. And so figuring out what type of content marketer you want to be is starting to become a discussion point, because content marketer has kind of lost its value. So bringing on Brendan and Bridget here today to talk about different career pathing for content marketing and how to go about your career. If you have an idea that you want to be in a content marketer, or if you're a content marketer now, but you don't love what you're doing, and kind of like how you can start thinking now to shape your career more actively and just get where you want to go faster. So with all that said, Brendan, you are a growth content marketer, which I love the title. I don't totally know what it means. And so I wanted to bring you on to talk about what you do in your day-to-day job and sort of how you got there.
I was really hoping that you could explain it to me. So that's not great. this job title and role is a Benjamin Elias special. He was my boss when I joined ActiveCampaign. Still absolutely adore him. I was brought in because I had the opportunity to join his team at ActiveCampaign just because I have this skill set that I describe as like deep generalism, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's not we've heard a lot about like a T-shaped marketer, like have a little bit of knowledge in some stuff and then go super deep on one thing. I think just because I've been building my own stuff for so long and had so many different roles and touched so many different pieces, I've gotten really good at a lot of different things. So the growth content marketer role was like, we need somebody to write blogs that doesn't suck at writing, like somebody actually pretty okay. And I'm still super nervous. That's why I'm probably hedging when I describe my writing skills, but
pretty okay.
The other piece of that is like, can you find opportunities for growth? And then can you be the one that handles the content there? Right? Like I found a thank you page that we hadn't touched, and 76,000 people per year see this thank you page. Who can own that? Do we have to bring in 27 teams and have 50 people and 500 meetings about it? No, like you can just give it to me and I can do all of the things on that page. We found we had an email list of 25,000 people that were like, we would like blog updates. And we weren't at the time sending them any blog updates. Like they literally, you know, you see those things at the bottom of blogs that it's like get updates and you're like, who signs up for that? Some people, they do. They just want to read the newest blogs. And it was like, well, who's going to write those emails? And I'm like, I found it. I can also do that. So it's a lot of like a growth kind of role, not from a product standpoint or an activation standpoint, but like an acquisition standpoint, but very centered around writing and content. I also touch and have been able to consult internally on YouTube strategy and social strategy and Pinterest. It very much is everything the light touches, but that's my role there. It's kind of the glue between all of these other pieces.
That's interesting. I like it. Do you think of that as life cycle marketing, or do you think of life cycle marketing as something different?
Good question. I don't think I'm smart enough to know what life cycle marketing actually is. So I'm not sure. I don't know. How do you define life cycle marketing?
Right. So we have a life cycle marketing manager on our team right now. And typically like they own email. Like that's the easiest way to describe it, is they like own email. But ultimately, I think like the broader definition, like the term life cycle, is like owning from beginning to end, right? Like optimizing from, you know, first touch, like all the way to requesting a demo or to customer, right? And so yeah, like true definition, I think is that. And so that would involve more of like those on-page optimizations or like growth opportunities, more on like organic side though than the paid side. So that's how I think of it. And it seems like there's some similarities, but I also kind of like, I like the title of like growth marketing manager. And so weighing like those different options too.
Yeah. And I'm being a little facetious. That's not fair. We actually have lifecycle marketing at ActiveCampaign. So my role is definitely a little bit different than that.
Gotcha. Okay. Does your lifecycle marketing manager own email? Do you know what your company?
Good question. To be fair, like I wish I had time to understand what everybody else does, but like if I don't work with people directly, I don't know what they do.
Yeah, that's very fair. There's probably a role that Dooley that I don't know exists right now. Especially with a global remote company. There's just, how would you know?
100%.
Okay. So Bridget, wanted to get like your backstory too. So kind of tell me like where you started out in marketing. I know it was a little bit of like SEO content. And then now, just for everyone's knowledge, you are the director of brand and content at Postal. So sort of tell me about where you started and why you ended up sort of going down the people manager route.
Yeah, my first like traditional content marketing role was at G2 at a time that they were scaling that program. Before that, I was at an ad agency for 3 years. So like my background in marketing is really campaign based, is very like help with the clients and like figure out what the value props are and then like build digital content around the actual campaigns instead of laying out, you know, 3 years worth of content marketing and blogs that we have to write to like do what. So my background is a little bit more strategic of just like focusing on what's in front of you instead of focusing on what it looks like 2 years from now. And at G2, we all were kind of content generalists. That was my first. And I think timing wise too, like that was really when content marketing was like, hit the blogs hard, right? For SEO, like distributed on social. And that was kind of what was going on in SaaS. And our team was 30 people. So we had an insane amount of manpower, women power, whatever power behind writing. And like, we could get a lot of velocity very fast because there were so many of us. And that was also unheard of. Like, nobody has a content team that big for good reason. But so moving out of that role, I went to a company called Big Time that was just like, was doing their demand gen stuff, but also consulting on content. Their content strategy was much more customer focused and community focused and not so much on SEO, which was the other side that I'd never really seen before. Or what I was doing back at the agency, I guess, is what you would consider the same thing. Where like, you're not getting thousands of views on a blog, but there's people maybe converting from those blogs because they found it because they have that problem. And then getting to Postal, I was really passionate about kind of bringing brand under, and I was working on brand at Big Time too. So like, I was like demand gen, but then also like moving into a brand marketing role. I was really excited about the opportunity to be able to bring brand and content into one team. They were trying to figure out what to do with brand, whether it should go under product marketing, whether it should go somewhere or stand alone on its own. And it goes back to your content is everything. Like, so is brand. So like anything that we're putting out that has written words on it is considered content marketing at Postal. And we are trying to rethink the way that we use our blog. We're trying to rethink the way that we use our website and like the community and like the distribution side of it. So, and it's a startup. So like everything is a generalist, but it's kind of like we have to go back to being more specialized. And I think that's where we're going to go forward.
Nice. Okay. There's a few different ways that we can take this.
I know that was a lot.
No, it's great though. Yeah, there's like a lot from this. So one, do you think that brand should live under content or content should live under brand at like a growth stage company? Obviously, eventually it's usually split out and there's like brand, content, growth, whatever. But early stage, like who do you think should own what?
I think that if they don't own each other, they should at least be like working together on the same projects, because it is like, I really do think of our demand gen campaigns, product launches, like that is content still. That is part of the brand and like putting out, like I think of the brand and content team at Postal as the creative team within the, and I mean, not saying that all of our marketers are incredibly creative, but like we are like the production house behind our marketing team, which can be tough, but it's also make sure that everything is kind of in line. Everything is up to voice and tone. I think it just makes the most sense for at least a growth stage company to kind of like do think like measure quality and quantity together, I think is the balance. And that's hard, but I think it's necessary.
Yeah. What's kind of fun about that is you started out in an agency, right? And now you're essentially creating like an in-house agency is how you're describing it.
But I think that we need to do that more in SaaS. There's too many people kind of out doing these tactics to like growth hack something. And it's like, but what is that actually doing for you long-term? Like, let's pick a direction and let's just stay that same company and grow like our subscriber base, grow this. But like, how do you do that? You stay the same company. You just get better and better. You speak the same language the whole time though. So like, as you do that and you build quality things, you're also building quantity because you don't have to go back and like trash any of those things, right?
Yeah, for sure. And actually, like, my first job and my background, like, in college was, like, advertising. Like my degree was in advertising, and then, like, my first job was, like, at an agency. So that's interesting, too, because I have, like, a similar mindset of content, and then sort of, yeah, got into a little bit more of, like, the SEO, the long-form stuff, like, more of traditional content marketing, sort of bridge those things, but still started out like in the agency world and have that sort of mindset. And then Brendan, I feel like you work in sprints. Like, tell me if I'm wrong, but like all of us, that seems to be like a trending theme of like thinking about sprints, and your company is like literally called Growth Sprints. So talk about that, like thinking about content in terms of sprints rather than, I don't know, content calendars.
I think content calendars, I'll say this, I think content calendars, if you are the type of person that can really adhere to that and be disciplined, I've never found that I'm able to, and I've just thrown away too many content calendars, especially like you work so hard on it and you're like, we have everything mapped out for 6 months, and then like 9 weeks in, it's like, well, that's garbage. That's a worthless spreadsheet now. I think with sprints, and the reason I started Growth Sprints was just feeling a lot of the way that we do, well, Growth Sprints was built out of like, I felt like the SEO industry was just broken. This idea of like, you need to get married on the first date and like 6 and 12 month retainers. And by month five, you're just kind of like making up work, trying to like justify still get paid. It just wasn't a good, it was more of a relationship thing. But almost everything that I do is like very finite, whether at ActiveCampaign or in my consulting or anything, is usually very finite in scope. Like, I need personally that beginning and end. Here's what we're going to do. Here's where we're going. Here's why we're going there. And then it's done. And we might revisit it later. But I think in the world of content, you can get in this mode of, let's just like keep spinning the wheel over and over and over and over, versus like, all right, cool. We're going to refresh content for a month. And then we're going to create new content. And then we're going to do this other thing for a month. And the other stuff can just sit. It turns out it's okay. Like, it not needs constant management. So that's a lot of where like the sprint methodology comes from, at least for me. And I was also very fortunate to work at an agency that was primarily a design agency, where I ran SEO there, and being able to see how they ran design sprints, and Jake Knapp and this whole idea of like sprinting in design and how they did it was really informative. And it was like, we could just do that in marketing and content too.
Nice. Okay. So defining projects, because this is constantly a work in progress for me, is how long do you think is a project, right? Or how long is a sprint in your mind? What's like a good length for a content sprint?
I think it depends on how you've broken, like who's responsible for tracking things, who's responsible for like all of that sort of stuff. So if you're doing content and you're not also the person reporting on everything, like you're not doing weekly, God help us, monthly, quarterly, annually. You're laughing, Bridget.
I know.
Weekly reporting is such a nightmare. Please don't do it if you don't have to. I think mostly on output, like how long does this take to make the thing? And then if there is like an ongoing effort, that's totally fine. But I'll give you a good example. We run like a show called Growth Decoded at ActiveCampaign. That's an ongoing thing, but they still run in seasons, right? Mm-hmm. I think for most content efforts, having that scope and being like, this is the project that we're working on right now, even if you're doing social or whatever, you can still block it within like, we're doing this focus for now and then move on to the next focus. It's worked really well. And it could be anywhere from like, hey, we're going to work on this. I just made an Asana board today for like a big thing again, because I need that organization. Otherwise, I am pure chaotic energy all the time. Just organizing that in there has been so helpful. And that's going to take us through, I think, the next like 6 or 8 weeks. And then it's like, okay, cool. We'll figure out, we're not going to wait till the end. Let's be honest. You're never like at the end of a project and you're like, what shall we do next? Like, there's nothing on our plate. We just are sitting around. That stuff will fill in for you. So I think by giving it that end, you then can answer that question for other people of like, hey, when are you going to like, I don't know if your experiences are the same as mine, but you get those requests from like other teams and other initiatives, and executive leaders want this done and they're going this direction. We're doing this thing. Great. I can do that when this project is over. Mm-hmm. So you at least buy yourself that much time and focus. And I think that's super helpful when you work in content, to not just constantly be chasing other people's desires or whatever they want that in that week.
Yeah. Yeah. The two things that stood out to me for that too are, knowing that those are going to come, like there's not just going to, like you said, there's not just going to be a time where it's like the rest of the departments are good. Like they don't need us. We can just do our own thing like we planned. So not overcommitting yourself. Like this is a flaw of mine of like overcommitting. So if anything, undercommitting. So you're building in like some flexibility for some of those things, but also working in sprints, being like, we've dedicated ourselves to this. We're definitely doing this for this sprint. Thank you for bringing this up. We can address this in this sprint. We can start getting it mapped now. Just keep more organized. So Bridget, you were nodding quite a bit too. So thoughts on sprints and planning in general?
It's interesting because we have the same methodology, but I would never call it a sprint. But the way that you were saying focus, that's what I mean when I say like, when we're talking about a T-shaped mark or specialist, like I am so passionate about doing things well and then going and finding other things to do. So like you were saying, like focus on social, like the more heads that you can get together to like to work on one project, the better. And then you set that program up for success. And then you can leave it for 2 months and go work on something else. But if you tried to do both of those things at the same time, you're setting yourself up for failure, and you're setting yourself up for both of those programs to be mediocre at best and not have impact. Honestly, the goals of most of content programs or like marketing programs in general are the same. So why do we have to like, well, we need 50 leads from social and 50 leads from organic search. Can it just be 100 leads somewhere? Like, why does it have to be so? And I think that people outside of marketing and outside of content specifically, when they think about distribution, they think about it has to be everywhere. I think about wherever those people are, it has to be good. So, and I think a lot of companies do it the wrong way, and they get so lost on, we have to stand up a social program. We have to stand up an organic program. We have to do, and like doing that with two people is literally impossible. You're setting yourself up to be lukewarm. And like, how do you have a big brand and have the, and this is why I think brand and content should be so close together, is because all of that is brand building. When you do things really well, people start to pay attention to your brand because everything that comes out from you, they want to read or they want to be a part of, or they want to attend that event because you do things well. Your brand is that you do it well.
Yeah. Oh man, there was so much good stuff there. The thing that stood out to me though is like why OKRs work better than KPIs a lot of times too. And making everything a marketing goal, like rather than like a kind of role specific goal. So I've been trying to be cognizant of this when making like OKRs or making just like quarterly plans and like goals for the team. But like it ends up being, it seems like what works the best is here are our marketing goals. Like we need to try and hit these things. Well, yeah, we don't really care how we get there. If we hit this number, everyone's happy. Leadership is happy, marketing is happy. And so here are like some ways that we can get there, right? Like hitting it this way, like, yeah, hitting it through email, hitting it through events, whatever. But if we still hit these numbers over here, I don't really care like how we get there, right? And so leaving it up, like leaving some creativity, but also having some guardrails of like, here's some bets on like how we're going to win and like how we're going to hit this number.
Direction is good. You need some kind of like objective to be able to look at, right?
Yeah, take this bet. Or we believe enough in this bet that we're going to like go all in here. Brendan, let's go back to just your career in general. So you've been a content leader or just marketing leader, like at least twice. And I feel like it's at least three times, like as a teacher, like you're managing a lot of people. And so I'm counting that as a people manager. So you've done it a few times. And then at one point, I saw a comment that you left saying that you realized it wasn't for you. So what was that moment when you realized that? And what about that role like made you think, oh, this is not for me?
Yeah. So let's talk, like, I'll try and be as brief as I can with this. In terms of leadership, so I wasn't just a teacher. I was also an assistant principal for 2 years. And I think part of the problem is that I've never found myself to be in a leadership role where I had a leader above me that was any good. And I mean that very sincerely. And I think that's the biggest thing for if you're in content and you are in a leadership role, the leader you report to has to be a very good leader. And this is true across like in any organization in any role, right? Like if you're a director, like whatever, whoever you report to, whether it's a VP or something or the CMO, I don't care who it is. If they're trash, like you're going to probably be a trash manager. It's just hard. because you're not getting any leadership filtered down to you. You're not getting any mentorship. You're not getting any guidance. I've had been in three leadership roles, whether it's the assistant principal or SEO director at two different agencies. And the person right above me in the first two roles just ignored me. So I was just figuring it out on my own, which is its own kind of nightmare. And then the third time was just the most toxic, awful environment I've ever worked in my whole life. So I don't know if I'm a good leader or not, because I don't feel like I've ever had that opportunity. But I can tell you, I love making stuff. And the further you pull me away from making stuff, the more that like magnetic attraction like almost pulls me back into it. I keep finding things to make and do. And I just living my life in like meetings and spreadsheets just to be a manager of content, it almost like infuriates me because I can see it and I'm so close to it, but I just can't touch it. And that's really frustrating. I want to still be able to be a part of it. And I think that's why I've said in the past and still feel like sometimes, and maybe can I be like honest? Can we just have like a really transparent moment? Like I'm scared to say out loud that I'm not a good people manager, because I'm afraid that in the future, if I build this narrative for myself of like, I'm not a good manager, if I apply for manager jobs, they're going to be like, Brendan's not a good manager though. Like he said, he's not a good manager. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll be like the CEO of Peloton or something, like just said he's not good at it. Like, why didn't anybody believe him? I don't want to do that. So I don't want to like shoot myself in the foot, because I don't think I've necessarily really done it. But I mean, honestly, to answer your question directly, like the moment I knew is when I read all the leadership books, all the management books, felt like I got like spiritual with it. I'm like, this is what God has for me in my life. Extreme ownership, we're doing it. And it still crashed in the biggest, like most insane blaze of glory ever. And it was just like, maybe this isn't for me. And I wish that more organizations had a senior level individual contributor role, right? Like how Kristen LaFrance at Shopify, or even to some extent, maybe like how Dave Gerhart was at Drift, things like that, where you have this person who can be the face of a brand, who can be that outward kind of like personality and whatever else. Doesn't always have to be a founder or somebody on the executive leadership team. But if you have a person like that, like, or you don't have one right now, like make that, like give that content person a career that likes making stuff, that opportunity to do that at your company if they want to, you know?
I love everything about this. I think there's a few other things that come to mind. So one, they're kind of touching on this fact that I think there's like a world where a lot of people that you, for instance, have like extreme ownership. And so, you know, so that can translate really well into like an awesome IC. It can also translate like really well into leadership. And a lot of like the success either way depends like on there being like a good marketing leader there, or they're just being like good executives. Like, you know what I mean? You can't by yourself like shape an entire brand. You can't like make a brand like be successful. And I think a lot of times marketers like have that on their shoulders of like, no, like it's all on marketing. Like if we fail, like it's going to be like marketing's problem, right? And we like feel that weight. But like ultimately there's so many other factors at play, right? Like there's the product, there's your manager, there's their manager, right? And so having an environment like where you can succeed in leadership or as an IC is like the number one thing, right? And so to your point, like it's hard to know if it's not a good fit at this other company, if it's like never going to be a good fit. That's like the first thing that comes to mind for me, is that it's so much about choosing the right company to start with, right? And then you can be successful in a few different places there. And then two, the thing that I think about is like what gives you energy. And you kind of talked about like creating things like gives you energy, right? And so like following that, and like when do I feel like I have like an ulcer, and when am I like just feeling normal, you know what I mean? Or like just feeling like myself and doing more of like what makes you feel like yourself. So those are the things that come to mind. Bridget, any thoughts on this, like being in both roles?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I've been in leadership positions where you feel like you're advocating, like you feel really good about what your team is putting out. And then at some point it gets stopped, and then you have to go back to your team and say, hey guys, that wasn't it actually. But then it's like everybody felt so good about that. That's extremely hard. That is so hard to go back to your team and be like, hey, I know we all loved that. So-and-so didn't love that. And like, that's tough. But I think that that comes, what you were saying is like from a good leader and being able to explain, like, the four of us brainstormed and we came up with this and we went here. And maybe it's bringing the leaders into those things early on so that they understand how the campaigns come to be or whatever it is. But like the more that you can get your leader to understand the way that you work, because I think that's the other thing, is that like more often than not, especially for a content role and a director, I'm not reporting to somebody that understands content marketing or like the fundamentals of like how I want to. And honestly, it's usually a VP, a CMO, is a demand gen person, is somebody that has tied dollars to like results. So like that's normally what you report to in marketing, because that's what their job is. Their job is to report the results to the CEO. So they have to be well versed in all of those things. But my job is to go and explain how the team works, how we come up with these things, how, and be that middleman and be that advocate for them. It's hard when they're not a good leader, but when they're a great leader, they trust you. They trust your team to have the right answers because they know that you know what you're doing. And like, they allow you to fail as well. Sometimes you don't know what you're doing and like, that's okay. I think too, Brendan, the other thing that stood out to me was like, a lot of these other tech companies like don't have the higher IC roles, and that's unfortunate. I also think that ICs are seen as people that can't teach people, and that's just not true. I think we only think that managers should be allowed to teach their people. That's the furthest from the truth. I want support people to be teaching my people how the product works. I want my product marketing person to be talking to say, like, the more that you can get everybody talking and teaching together, that's a good team. That's a good company. Because then it becomes one goal, to your point of the brand. Like, it isn't just on marketing. The brand could be tainted by something that somebody in sales said on a discovery call. Like, I have no control over that. But do you have good people at your company that will uphold what you're trying to put out outwardly? I think in SaaS specifically, we see all of these brands sometimes go out there and they have an incredible presence, but the employees on the inside are screaming, this place sucks. This is not what it's saying out, that it is out loud. This is not, like, and it feels even worse to them because the whole brand is out there parading around that they're so great, but then they're not taking care of their people. So are they really that great if they're not taking care of their people? That goes into branded content and all of that stuff. So I'm passionate too about like, my team working closely with the people team, making sure we have an internal brand and internal content that feels good. And like that gets the sales, like the best part about working in this space is the ICPs work at the company too. And then they can create content for me. And then they're bought into that as well.
I was going to say, I love that with like internal content. I also want to use this analogy that I know Bridget has an athletic background. So I don't always like to make things about sports because I don't. But like, I think that you have this, I think a lot of times as managers, it's like, all right, there's like, you know, there's like owners, managers, and players. And it's like, yeah, but you forget even within players, right? If we look at like players on the field as individual contributors, right? Like you have captains and you have all-stars, and those aren't always necessarily the same people. And like, they can teach each other, right? As a manager, the thing you want to see is your star player, like pulling younger players aside and being
yeah,
like,
I want the number one shortstop to be teaching his backup how to play shortstop, not the coach teaching him how to play shortstop.
100%. And I think that like, if you looked at it, if you do understand sports analogies better than me, like maybe making your senior level IC a captain and like helping them work on that, like, hey, part of your role as a senior content marketer is training and is like internal brand and is internal content and stuff. Like, I love that, Bridget. That's super smart. The other part of this, and I think what we're really all talking about here, is culture and having a CMO or a VP or whoever that doesn't understand content is problematic because they will not create a culture for good content. I hear all the time, the three of us and everybody listening reads this on LinkedIn. Make better content. B2B doesn't have to be boring. All this crap. They're aiming at the wrong target. They're telling people to make better content. What they need to have is a better culture. Or else somebody there will try to make great content. And the brand team will tell them it's bad. The design team will claw that back. The product marketing team will say, that's not how we talk about this. That those TikToks you're putting out don't represent our product the way we want to, all this other crap. because the culture is wrong and it ends up optimizing for optics and looking busy and assigning people a lot of Asana tasks instead of actually making something great. And I think that has to come top down. Every place I've ever seen that, I'm like, hey, that's the kind of stuff I want to make. I see a founder, I see a CMO, I see a VP that gets content. So if they don't, and they have a pure, almost direct response, demand gen performance background, it's hard to make great content just because the culture is not there.
I think, yes. But there are, like, I'm in a role right now, I'm not reporting to a client, but she gets it. And she also trusts me to say, she knows that I'm the one that's plugged in. She knows I'm the one on Twitter. And like, that's not like, hey, Bridget, you're sitting on Twitter. It's like, hey, you know these things better than I do. What do we do? And like, she's genuinely asking me those things. So like, that changes too. That's a good leader, is to also say, I don't know this, but I need you to own it. And I also want you to teach me.
The trust factor, like, is the big one, right? Is like bringing on people that are better at you, like at that thing, right? Like that's like the ultimate goal. So I think at the top level, you need like a CEO that gets marketing, right? Like check for that one. Like they need to at least, even if they don't get marketing, they need to like buy into marketing is very important. We're going to invest in it. Like check number one. And then at the CMO VP level, that person needs to understand content before bringing on like a content person of like, what am I really investing in? How long does this stuff really take? So there's that part of it. And then I think there's an ideal like third part that it depends on the type of company, but I think especially if you're a venture funded like SaaS type company, it's helpful to have that growth person already in place. Like I think an ideal org chart for a lot of growth stage, like venture funded, like SaaS companies is for them to like bring in product marketing, then grow, like then content, just because then you can like start to get things rolling like quickly. And they're not completely dependent on content to deliver on day one, which it won't. And so then content can just like come in there and like
optimize. It helps the things that are already working. Yeah, better content will work better, but you've already set up all the demand gen stuff, so you just have to put it in the right places.
Yeah, so that's my current like working theory of like I look for all of these things like now in companies, and like that's like where I've seen success, and that's like where the content person has the space like to do all of those things. And then when you have all of them in place, like things like really start getting going. But curious on y'all's perspective on just like an ideal kind of org chart for what you'd be looking for in like a content role, like the check marks that you need. And then once the content team is starting to build out, like who needs to be on the content team? So just your thoughts on an ideal marketing team, ideal content team.
Brendan just pointed to me.
He's like, you're a manager. You're a manager. I'm not going to, that's above my pay grade, Bridget.
Yeah, I think that this, again, is something that we look really external for these answers, but growth stage companies is incredibly personal. Like, where, like, you have no idea if that same startup has the same structure as you, right? 50 people, whatever, they might have a really strong product and a really bad sales cycle. You might have the opposite problem, but like, how am I going to know that looking externally at your team? We could both be building a content team. I think that more of these conversations have to start internally and look to see, what do we have that's working? Where can we supplement that with content? And I think a lot of, it's hard to explain, but like I am in the 50-50. I am in the 50% is content programs and building strategy and executing content things. The other half is supporting customer success with content they need, supporting product marketing with content they need. Like the company as a whole still has to run on top of your own content programs that are still going on. And that is incredibly hard. That's just the reality of a startup though. Like we chose this. And I believe, and I said this earlier, I got the best person I could have possibly inherited when I started. He was generalist. He was running everything. And now we're working on him toward more of like what Brendan's doing of like a growth content marketing role. And then I will be focused player coach on the community side of things so that we can like build programs and that are really function and really do well. And he has focus. And then when we want to go build the social side of like really get into what that looks like, we can add somebody to the team for that because we have something else that's already working and somebody that's dedicated to that. So like I really believe in content programs, like not being above, like not shooting above your means. If you can run three of them really well with two people, do that. And then to say, hey, if you want me to run more programs, I need you to give me more people to dedicate to those programs. It's hard to explain that to anyone that doesn't get it, but I think it's the right way to go about it instead of looking externally and being like, there's not some that many people that can do what Brendan does and do it in very well in a lot of places. But you get people too that are more passionate about what they're doing when they have ownership over like one or two things. So that's how I kind of structure my team, because that's how I like to work too.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Brendan, any thoughts on ideal structures or non-ideal structures, like based on the places you've worked so far?
Yeah, I think so. A couple different things. My first thought as we've been talking is like, as we've gotten closer to, as marketing has had to get closer to the money, meaning like we always have to like attribution and all that sort of stuff. And like, how much revenue are we driving? We're kind of like the Venn diagram between marketing and sales is kind of becoming almost a circle of like, we're just finding more sales, traditionally sales activities to do to claim as marketing so we can claim more influence on revenue. Enter account-based marketing. It's sales. Just call it sales, which is fine. And I think, so the problem is like to have that, like I wrote down what you said, Camille, of like, I need a CMO that gets a CEO that gets marketing. Then my marketing leader has to get content. Then the leader below them, whether it's a VP or CMO down to a director, the director has to be able to make good content. That's why I loved working with Benjamin, because he wasn't a manager. He was actually better at my job than me. And when you work in content, like you can taste that, you can smell it. You're like, and it's hard. I don't know. Maybe I'm like the jerk here. But like when they're telling you your stuff isn't great and you're like, you make my stuff then. Let me see you do one of these. And they're like, well, I can't do that. I just like manage the spreadsheets around here. And you're like, okay, then like, I don't understand. But when your boss is better at your job than you, it's like, yeah, you're right. That wasn't very good. You know what I mean? They don't have to be like tactically better, but when they have that, what is that? Is that like an Ira Glass quote or something? Like the taste gap, right? Where it's like, I know my taste is good enough that I know what I'm making isn't where it should be. When they have good enough taste and you trust in that with them, they have to have that. And I think that's really essential. So I look less at like, what does the org chart look like? Although there is like problematic pieces of that. If your content team is a service org for the company, that's, unless you just like to sit down and put your head down and write all day, or just like make, I don't even know, like slide decks or whatever, that's going to be a hard role to stay in, because you're constantly at the whim of everybody else. You'll make something, it'll get used once and it's thrown out, and you're just like a hamster on a wheel every day. And if that's what you want out of your career, that's fine. That kills me, because I'm like a lead sled dog. Like I need to know, like you just got to point to the top of the mountain and I'm like full speed ahead. I can't just run on the treadmill. So, and I think that's common. What I would look for, and what I wrote down as I was thinking, was like three different things. Like, I want to understand the balance of sales and marketing before I join a company. Like, how sales-led are we? How marketing-led are we? I want to understand that like sales cycle and payback period, because it lets me know how much bandwidth I have. If we have like a 3-year payback period, it's like, okay, my content like has to do different stuff versus like a company that's like, no, we literally have a 30-day payback period right now. So like we're good. We make our money back really quickly on everything else we're doing. You can play a little longer on stuff. You can do a little more brand or whatever. And then the other piece is, not to be fancy, but like net retention rate, meaning like, and this is something I've only come to understand like recently, is like how much are our existing accounts and our existing business growing? Do we even need new customers? Because all of that, just to like bring it back, all of that influences the culture that then exists around content and how much freedom you have and how creative you can be, and also what the expectations are around your work.
You're so smart.
Seriously. Thank you for just outlining this entire episode, like making it nice, like bite-sized for people. Like we'll just take
the summary guy. That was like, the bullet points like, at the end of the article.
What they don't see is these like psychopathic like scribbles that I have on the back of an envelope that I'm writing on. Like it sounds like I'm a professional, but I promise this looks,
you know what? The journey doesn't have to be pretty, okay?
It's not.
Yeah, no, you should see my desk right now. Or I don't know, the last like video that I posted, I was like, oh, I had like no regard for like what my background looked like in that. It's just like pure chaos. One thing is to kind of like wrap this up. One thing that I loved about just talking to y'all and like the ideas that I got from it was just leaning into like your strengths and letting the other people, whether that's your manager or whether it is a player, just going back to that, like sports analogy of like performer, like leaning into like where you're strong. So Bridget, like you talked about community and like brand and like you being able to like run that and feeling comfortable running that in the interim, like as you're building out the rest of that, but knowing that you have like somebody that's more of like that growth content person. And then Brendan, like as you're talking about like the ideal structures and like where you slot in, like having building that trust like between your manager at the time or when you're a manager, like having that for other people. And that's something that I think about a lot too, is like knowing how I like to take feedback, right? And then trying to pay attention to how other people like to take feedback and realizing that those things are different. And then two, like getting to Brendan, like what you talked about of like, can we just be honest here? If I'm being honest, like I don't have a lot of the traditional traits like of a good manager. Like I'm a ENTP on like that scale, which is like a debater type and exploring like different types of ideas and like can be a little bit more like everybody's right. Like I can see like your arguments. I can like, and so finding like the things within there though of like, oh, these traits that I have are actually really good for management. They're just not traditional. Like it's not going to say like on my report, you're a great leader, you know what I mean? And so leaning into like some of the things like within your personality that you're like, oh, I'm going to be stronger, like doing things like a little bit different than a traditional like manager would. And like leaning into your strengths, I do think that like most people like could, if they wanted to, be good leaders and they would just have a different leadership style. And so realizing that just in the different types of leaders that I've had, and how they've been very different, but very like successful in their own way. But there's that side. But then also realizing like, what at the end of the day, like gives you energy, like gives you like strength? Is it creating? Like, is it being in the spreadsheets? Like, is it reporting, you know? And yeah, finding like different career paths, exploring them and figuring out which one is the right one for you. So I don't know that that was a great summary, but I appreciate both of you being on here for this experiment and your dogs. So that's where I thought the episode was going to end. But right after we said our goodbyes, Brennan asked a question, and I think it actually led to the most insightful, best parts of this episode. So here it is.
I feel like we talked about me, like you asked Bridget and I questions, but can I pose some of these same questions to you? Because I feel like you also have really good insight. Like what attracted you? Like what about content? Like the same question you just asked us, like what in there got you where you are right now? Like what made you be like, this is a place where I could really like thrive as a leader?
That's a good question, because I don't know that I had it totally figured out. I wanted to be a people manager and I wanted to be in like a head of content role. And the why was, I just think I realized that like I couldn't build something like by myself. Like I realized that like you need like the whole team, like you need people with skills that I don't have, right? To build like something bigger than you are, right? And so kind of like realizing like why you want to get there was part of it for me, of being part of something and building something as a team and like getting energy from people basically, and knowing that was important, like wanting to be like in that space. And then also looking at, yeah, the type of company, the type of leader. So in my case, like Dooley and like the type of brand that they were building and like the type of leader that Mark is and the creativity side of it, like leaned into my past sort of like untraditional marketing background of being more in like the ad space and more of like the content community side of things. And so when marketing started going that way and I started like experimenting with it, and being like, oh, like I'm like fairly good at this, and like getting some learnings from that and being able to work with other people that have strengths that I don't have. So another like full disclosure, I'm an okay editor. I'm not like a great editor. And so what I am good at is kind of that like taste part of things. Like I have a pretty good idea of like what's going to work well, and like what is good content, right? And to some degree, that is an editor, right? Like the very like technical parts, there's much better like technical editors out there than me. And so realizing that like that specific role, like a very like technical like editor role, is probably not for me, but that like higher level content strategy with like a very creative like type company that's willing to try like untraditional things like every other week was a pretty good fit. And so I don't know that like I could have drawn out like a dually like on paper of like, this is the company. I don't know that I like thought that that existed. And so then when it did kind of like roll around, basically Mark had like reached out to me about that. It wasn't a good time at the time. And then we sort of like synced back later about it. And it was a good time then. Those are some of the reasons, is like wanting to be part of something that I believed in. Like, I think that's a big part, is you have to believe in like the product and the mission and the people behind it. There has to be like good leadership there already. And you should kind of feel that on the interview, like in talking to someone, like one-on-one, you're like, you kind of vibe with the person, one. And then two, like you like the direction that they're taking the marketing team. Like you buy into the way that they want to do marketing. So those are some things for me. I don't know if that's helpful. Still a work in progress.
I love it. Sorry to take over and ask you a question at the end. I just didn't want to miss your insights.
My experience was very similar, Camille, too, with Postal. Like, also knowing, because like I love being a people manager, but I'm also a creator too. I want to be in a role where like I can still use that part of my brain, because that's the best. But I also know that as somebody that is loud and feels that way, there's a lot more people that are quiet and feel that way. And if I can create that environment for my team and fill it with more people that are creating, you get more creative and you get more things that are against the grain. But that's what marketing is. It's, you're supposed to be doing things that are different. Why are we still, everybody's doing the same shit?
Yeah.
Because everybody acts the same way.
Yeah, no, the thing I have to bring up here. So Brandon, one time, my husband like pointed out that Super Bowl commercials, the best ones are the ones that are like crowdsourced, right? Whereas like everyone's making their like Dorito commercial or whatever. And that used to hurt me at the time, because I was like at an ad agency, right? And so it's like, oh, okay, so like what we do is like completely useless. Like our like creative talent is like completely useless, because we might as well just crowdsource it. But like now being in this role and like in accepting that that's true, like that like you're going to get something better from like the majority, from the group, from collaborative thinking than like your own brain, even if you are a somewhat creative person, that like seeing that happen and translate, like all of our best memes, for instance, were just caption contests, like all of them. And so seeing it like in real life, and then like seeing like the traction when everybody can participate and weigh in and have their like voice heard, like that like gives me the most energy. So to like to wrap it up, like that's like why I'm here and like how I got here. But I also think that like careers can change. And so like to Brendan's like career journey, is you can be people manager, IC, go back and forth, like that's beautiful too. So I expect like some of that along the way. All right. Well, I'll let you all go. I appreciate you guys jumping on for this experiment.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate, thanks for having me on, Camille. This was super fun. Thanks, Bridget.
Yeah. Thank you.
Love you both.
Thanks for listening to Content Logistics. This episode is produced by Motion, a done-for-you B2B podcasting agency for busy marketers. If you liked what you heard, please follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.